Good evening. Thank you for joining us today. My name is Buddy Evans, President and CEO for the YMCA of Montclair. We're glad to come together with all of you on the eve of the Dr. Martin Luther King National Holiday. As part of our Brave Space dialogue this evening, we will reflect back to the memorable day in 1966 when Dr. King visited our town of Montclair. We will celebrate his work, and in light of the challenging times our country finds itself in, we will talk about how his teachings can help us shape a more equitable community today and into the future. I would like to remind all of you that our conversation is being recorded. This program has come together from the leadership of our YMCA Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Committee. Our YMCA welcomes all people and continually aspires to operate in an inclusive manner. Our committee is here to help us harness the diversity of perspectives and needs represented in our communities so that we can take action together and have a space for conversation and growth. Thank you to our DEI committee for putting together today's program. With that, let me turn it over to Laura Quiros, our Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Chair. Laura?
So just welcome everyone tonight. It's really nice to see people, and it's incredibly important that we're here together to share space on the eve of this very important holiday that personally I don't think could have come at a better time. And so with that, we want to welcome you to our Brave Space Dialogue. And in the spirit of dialogue, we see dialogue as a space of love, as a space of healing, and as a space of learning. And so before we move forward in our evening tonight, I just want to put forward sort of three adjectives for you to think about, and then we're briefly going to go into what we call community agreements. So the words that I want you to really think about tonight are belonging, mindfulness, and intentionality. Belonging, mindfulness, and intentionality. These are the words that really guide social justice movements, as well as the word visioning. And so as we enter tonight's space as a community and we learn and we heal and we love, I'd like us to be mindful of these community agreements. These are agreements that you can use in your own work, you can use in your own life. And so we see dialogue as a place of revolutionary love, as a transformative place. The difference between dialogue and debate is in dialogue, we come together for shared meaning. We also encourage you tonight, when you do have the opportunity, we're going to hear from a few renowned speakers, and then we're going to open up the space, depending on time, to dialogue. And during those moments, we encourage you to speak from the I. We'd like you to think about how you're listening. Active listening involves the heart, the mind, and the soul. And so notice your reactions to the speakers tonight and notice your reactions as you show up tonight. The next community agreement that we hope for you to strive for tonight is make space and take space. And so a lot of times in these dialogues, we have many people entering this virtual space. So be conscious about making space, which means stepping into the space and then taking space for other people to move forward. And then the last thing is the use of the chat. Because we have a large group tonight, we'd really like to lean into the chat. We're going to save the chat so the chat also becomes a vehicle for dialogue. So as you move forward tonight, please practice the dialogue behaviors, learning to listen to each other, and we really hope that we have the opportunity and the time for you to share yourself and your stories openly and honestly. So thank you again, especially to the students who showed up tonight and to our community members. We're really honored to have you as we lean into this Brave Space dialogue. So thank you. Buddy, I'm going to hand it back over to you.
Thank you, Laura, and I hope everyone can hear me. I know I've been having some technical difficulties, but our YMCA stands for equity and social justice. For those of you who may be wondering, what is the connection between the Y and Martin Luther King? The truth is, the YMCA has always been involved with the civil rights movement, and Dr. King actually grew up in the Butler Street YMCA in Atlanta. Dr. King was a Y kid, like many of us, and the Y has been a safe place for many civil rights leaders like Andrew Young, Vernon Jordan, and many others. I share with you now a short video that highlights how our movement interlocks with the civil rights efforts in our country.
Thank you. The YMCA came to the United States in Boston in December 1851. Early rules of the Y excluded Catholics and religions other than Protestant, women, and people of color. However, in 1853, the first black YMCA was founded in Washington, D.C. by Anthony Bowen, a former slave from Maryland. It was the first non-church black institution in America, predating Lincoln University in Oxford, Pennsylvania by a year. The first black YMCA was formed at Howard University in 1869, and William Hunton became the first full-time black CEO in the YMCA movement in 1888. Then in 1894, the historic Butler Street YMCA was founded in Atlanta. Often referred to as the Black City Hall of Atlanta, early activities revolved around prayer and song.
I hope you enjoyed this short video. I now would like to bring this a little closer to home. As many of you know, our community was home to one of the colored Ys that was mentioned in the national video, our very own Washington Street YMCA. At this time, it is my pleasure to introduce a man that not only grew up in Montclair, but also was a Y kid at the Washington Street YMCA. Elvoid Christmas is a lifelong resident of Montclair. He has been married to his beautiful bride, Melly, for 57 years. They have three children and one grandchild. Elvoid was employed by the United States Postal Service for 35 years, retiring in 2000 with the title of postmaster. In 1993, Elvoid reached the Black Achievers Award of Business and Education from the YMCA of Northern and Central New Jersey. Elvoid is the chairman of the Washington Street YMCA Memorial Committee, responsible for affixing a commemorative plaque on the Charles H. Bullock Middle School in remembrance of the Washington Street Y, a branch of the YMCA of Montclair that was demolished in 2005. Elvoid, thank you for being here this evening, and please take a few moments to share your thoughts about the time when Dr. King visited our town of Montclair.
Okay, thank you very much. I really appreciate you, Buddy, and the YMCA including me in this celebration and discussion of Dr. Martin Luther King. Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was born on January 15, 1929, and died by an assassin's bullet, April the 4th, 1968. He was only 38 years old when he died. He was a man short in stature, but with a very large footprint of accomplishments. Reverend King was a Baptist preacher, but he also was a prayer warrior, a spiritual motivator, and a prophet. I had the good fortune to hear Reverend King speak on two occasions. Once at Virginia State College in 1962, and again in 1966 at Montclair High School. He was an amazing speaker who had mastered the spoken word. It seemed like thunder and lightning flashed from the podium when he spoke, raining down the realization of the situation of our people, and we became wet with the truth. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all people are created equal. That is a lie. We have a divided nation, a system of treatment for people of color and another for privileged white people. We saw that illustrated on January the 6th of this year at the Capitol Building in Washington, D.C. It was true when Reverend King said it years ago, and it is still true today. However, Reverend King left us a blueprint as his legacy to save the soul of America, where people will not be judged by the color of their skin, by the content of their character. He taught us to utilize civil disobedience along with nonviolence, love, and forgiveness. As John Lewis would say, he taught about good trouble. He gave us the answer and the pathway to equality and unity. He must be honored as someone who dedicated his entire life as short as it was, to service others. Rest in peace, Reverend King. We love you. Thank you.
Thank you, Elboy, for sharing. And now it is my pleasure to introduce another longtime Montclair resident and special guest. Stanley White has served as a president of the Montclair Martin Luther King Scholarship Fund and the host of the annual MLK Breakfast for the past 27 years. He is a graduate of the Montclair High School class of 1969 and completed his education with a bachelor's degree from the University of Wisconsin and a master's in education from Stanford University. He has taught mathematics and technology at local high schools and community colleges. He retired from AT&T as a computer analyst and programmer. Stanley met Martin Luther King on September 11, 1966, when Dr. King delivered his sermon at Union Baptist Church, and he had the distinct honor of serving as an usher for Dr. King's afternoon program at Montclair High School. I present to you Stanley White.
What happened on Sunday, January the 11th, 1966? Let me back up a little bit. The week before, on Sunday, January the 4th, I went to Union Baptist Church to attend Sunday school. At the time, I was entering my sophomore year at Montclair High School. When I arrived, there was no Sunday school. The adults were in the midst of preparing for Dr. King's arrival the following Sunday to celebrate the retirement of the pastor, Reverend D.C. Rice. Reverend Rice, former mayor of Montclair, Matthew G. Carter, the second Black mayor of Montclair, James Ramsey, met me in the basement of the church to inform me that there was no Sunday school. And when they explained that there was a meeting for putting the final touches on Dr. King's arrival, I didn't know anything about it because I had spent the summer out of town. The tickets were all gone. They said, well, we can accommodate you this way. If you will be an usher, you're guaranteed to get in and have a seat. So naturally, I said yes. The following Sunday, September the 11th, went to church because there was still no Sunday school because everything was being arranged for Dr. King's arrival. We thought Dr. King was coming that afternoon, but much to a lot of our surprise, he spoke at the 11 o'clock church service that day. We knew something was up because there was a lot of security going on around the church. After the church service was over, the people that were going to be ushers were supposed to arrive at Montclair High School at 2 o'clock. So I rushed home, grabbed something to eat. Then my father drove me to the high school. We arrived at 2 o'clock. All the participants were there, but we waited. We did not know what the delay was in the arrival of Dr. King and Reverend Rice. Around 3 o'clock or shortly thereafter, the door to Mac's Music Room, if those of you that know Montclair High School, that's where we had assembled, open. Reverend Rice walked in first, then Matthew Carter, who was going to do the introductions of Dr. King, and Dr. King followed behind him, and another man, which I later found out was his bodyguard. They thanked us for participating in the program, and then they shook our hands. Remember, I was a sophomore in Montclair High School. I was amazed that the person that I had seen in the on TV, Walter Cronkite, Evening News, from the Civil Rights Movement, was there, and he shook my hand. At that point, since things were going late, we were dismissed to go to our stations. My assignment was probably one of the best assignments in the house. I was assigned to the balcony in the high school. Could see everything and hear everything. What I found out later in life, meaning in the last 10 years, the reason for the delay, the tickets for the auditorium weren't out very quickly. Some members of the community in Montclair were upset that they were not allowed to participate. The compromise was that the gymnasium was open up for the overflow. Prior to coming into Mac's music room, Dr. King, Reverend Carter, and Reverend Rice went to the gymnasium to greet these other people. So they did a full presentation for them, and then they came into the music room. The other thing that I found out was that the Montclair school newspaper, the amphitheater, had a photographer. In the library of Montclair High School, there are pictures that most people I don't think know exists. Some of those pictures shows the demonstrators that were on Park Street. They had to be away from the high school on the north side of the high school. And there are other pictures. The famous one is Dr. King sitting in the music room with his bodyguard, waiting to be called to the auditorium to speak. From a personal point of view, I was expecting to see Dr. King and his whole family. One of the things that I have learned in later life is that the people that we look up to, the people that are so-called famous, they're humans. They have a family. They do things like the rest of us, even though we see them in this special way. Dr. King had to sacrifice a lot of his personal experiences to be involved in the civil rights program as he was. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. White, and thank you, Mr. Christmas. Mr. White, I was listening so intently to your story and I was just visioning it, and it's such a privilege to have you tell that story tonight for us on the eve of this holiday. So really, thank you for that. I also want to, before I open up the mic to our participants tonight, I want to just thank my co-chairs for the Diversity, Equity, Inclusion Council from the YMCA, Kimberly Marsh and Mike Childs. I want to thank Anne Margaret Gutierrez for really being a leader in this space as well, and the DEI board and all of our committee members who are on the call tonight. The Y has done a lot of work around diversity, equity, inclusion, and one of the things that we've been doing is holding these Brave Space dialogues. So thank you for everyone for showing up tonight. Mr. White, I'm really leaning into the word sacrifice that you just shared with us at the end of your talk and thinking about, as we gather here tonight, what are we all willing to sacrifice and what are all of our sort of forms of healing moving forward? I also am leaning into what you said about we have these people that we may look up to, whether they're famous or people that we hold in high regard, and this commonality of being human. And so with your words tonight, which just were so wonderful and really feel privileged in hearing them, I want us all to think about this question. Lee, would you mind just putting up the slide that has the question on it so folks can see it? So as we sit here tonight in a place of mindfulness, intentionality, and in the spirit of belonging to our community and to our families and to our friends, We have a question that we'd like for you to think about, and we would like you to think about it and talk about it now as we start to open up our mics, and also as you press end meeting and go back to your Sunday evening with your family or with your friends and your loved ones. So the question that we have tonight is, what gets in the way of being more human together as a way of disrupting the status quo and undoing systems of oppression? And so really think about this idea of what gets in the way. You know, what gets in the way to leaning into love and for us being more human? In the words of Dr. Martin Luther King, he said, "I have decided to stick to love. Hate is too great a burden to bear." And so personally, I hold that love from a very revolutionary place and would like to now spend some time with you. It's about 7:20, so we're going to spend the next, 25 minutes listening to each other and sharing space tonight. Again, the question that Annika just put in the chat is, what gets in the way of being more human together as a way of disrupting status quo and undoing systems of oppression? So whatever resonates for you in that question, whatever you feel called to, we're going to have you raise your hand if everyone knows where the call button is, where the raise hand button is. And if you don't, you can unmute your mic. And we're going to have Annika and Margaret spotlight you when you talk. So I would love to start by having somebody come forward. It's always that awkward moment when no one wants to start us off, but it's also bravest moment. So who can kind of come forward and speak to that question or anything that resonates for you in this moment? Mike, go ahead.
I was happy that Mr. White mentioned Dr. King's humanity. With regard to him being, and I thought about him being a husband and a father and a friend. And I always thought about, if I were his son and I witnessed what I witnessed last week at the state capitol, I would say to the world, I want my father back, based on the Halloween dressing people who are fearful of a thing called democracy. Democracy requires sharing, and they're not willing to share. And as a retired principal, that's one thing. Sharing is caring, or they're not interested in that. So my take on all of that, and I have to, my lens is last week. It concerns me that we're in a place where we have always been. There was nothing new about that attack with regards to the Capitol, because we saw that for 400 years, standing outside of our our great grandparents' home with torches outside. So that wasn't new to a lot of people. It is my hope that we find a balanced place in the hearts of Americans to come forward, and this word kindness must be a part of our vocabulary. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Who's next? I know we have a lot of students, so we'd love to hear from you too.
Laura, I can share. Can you hear me?
Yes. Thanks, Kim. Go ahead.
Good evening, everyone. And thank you to everyone who has shared. And I think what's sitting with me with this question, Laura, is something that gets in the way of being more human together is lack of spaces like this. Because I feel when we have these conversations, when we get to hear, you called it a privilege, and I completely concur, the privilege of being able to hear the lived experience, the stories, the humanity that we all bring to these spaces. And there aren't a lot of spaces like this nowadays in particular. So that was just what jumped to mind when you posed that question for me. So I'm grateful to be here with everybody.
I appreciate that, because I think you're right that there aren't a lot of spaces like this. And then when there are spaces, it's almost like we don't know what to do with them and how do we step up and be brave. But in this moment, it really calls for bravery. So Liz, Dr. Voltman, I'm going to read your chat. And what you said is sometimes not knowing where to begin, thinking that what we do cannot add up to major change. Though it may not be true, I think that this mindset can get in the way of coming together to care and make productive change in small but important ways. Do you want to say anything else related to that?
I'm always, you know, kind of trying to think of or find ways, you know, personally, you know, to do things, you know, in the spirit of Dr. King, you know, not just on that day of action, right? It's a day on, not a day off, right? But to have that be part of the fabric of one's life, right? That's a whole nother mindset. And I just think an amazing way that I feel very privileged to get to do it is by teaching. Mm-hmm. And I just have to say how proud I am, because, you know, by me putting this out there to my students, you know, so many students here tonight, and that makes me so proud. And it's just that kind of contagious, like this is a contagion we need, right? Is just spreading positivity and trying to share with people ways that they can get involved and make a difference. Whether someone shares or not tonight, verbally or through the chat, you know, I hope my students will, and of course you welcome everybody to do so, but just knowing that they're here tonight, you know, it's what we can do, and it's what I can do to kind of make that ripple effect. And I thank you for hosting it so we could do this.
Hensley, I think your hand was raised.
Hi, good evening.
Good evening.
My name is Hensley Mass. I'm a member of Union Baptist Church. I think one of the ways that gets into the way of the oppression that we all face is the lack. I think our educational system is derelict in some ways, that we do not have in the core curriculum of our schools African-American history. And as a result of that, the mainstream citizenry, especially those of the majority race, are not fully aware of what the real African-American history is. And I believe if there were more awareness of that, we might see some consideration of you know, all the accomplishments our people have made, the achievements we have had, and maybe we might see maybe a better understanding of what our culture is all about. So I think we need to do a better job in how we teach African-American history in our school system.
Thank you. Jeff Freeman, I see your hand raised.
Good evening, everyone. First, I want to begin by saying that this is incredible. And I think that these types of conversations and discussions will hopefully bring us to a better place in Montclair and just at large and in the world, you know, in which we live. But I just want to build on something that was in the chat. I believe that it's fear. And I also believe that it's fear of being forced to be outside of your comfort zone. I think that in order to have these true conversations, I think people have to be able to go into a safe space such as this and be willing to step out of their comfort zone. As the principal of Montclair High School and as an educator, I believe that we must teach people that it's okay to be uncomfortable, because that is when you grow. If you use the analogy of working out, when you work out, you know, you feel sore, you know, but that's going to bring about growth. So I think it's okay for us to step out of our comfort zones. I do know we have to all agree that we're in a safe space, and the conversations and things that come from these discussions is to lead us to a better place. So I think it's that fear of stepping out of comfort zones.
Yeah, I so appreciate that. And then how as leaders do we model that for young people, right? How do we constantly push ourselves to places that aren't comfortable so that people can see that, that that's what takes change is moving out of that. I really think of this work as sort of a higher order purpose that is not about me, but about changing. And so that involves something that's moving beyond the fear. So I see some notes in the chat and I'm wondering if I will read them. And Anya says, I think one thing that can get in the way of being more human together would be ignorance and intolerance that would prevent even making an effort to make a change because of fear of letting go of the past. So again, we see this theme of fear and really understanding what that fear is about and what that fear is grounded in and if it's about us, or are we willing to move outside of ourselves for this higher order purpose of revolutionary love and healing? Christine says, plus undoing generations of hate, changing hearts. It takes time, but it is a worthy process that needs to be undertaken. We definitely should not give up on trying to establish a human connection between all of us. We have to achieve that. And I agree with the urgency in your words, Christine, that if there ever is a time, it has to be now, that there almost is no choice. Anyone else who would like to either raise your hand or even just unmute and speak? Miriam?
Oh, all right. Hi, my name is Miriam Jackson. And so as I was listening, thank you so much to the two gentlemen who spoke, just to know the history that is within Montclair is amazing. And I'm sure there's history within all of the towns within New Jersey, and it's unknown, you know? And so I hear, that's what I hear. I hear that that children do not know, that adults do not know, right? That there's so much that is placed upon knowing your history, but the history's not there. We have the Amistad curriculum that is to infuse Black history and to our teaching, not just within the month of February, not just during a specific time, but it is a mandate for New Jersey to infuse that. But teachers are not equipped or don't wanna be equipped, because some wanna be equipped and some are just hesitant because of understanding, right? And so are not equipped to be able to teach that and to be able to understand it, but not just Black history. There's so much history out there within so many different cultures and being able to understand that. And I think I heard you say, you hear fear, you hear fear. I think the fear why people are hesitant to be human is because one, there's just a lack of this parenting of teaching our new generation of how to truly be human, right? Of how to truly accept someone else who's not within your culture, who is not from your background, who's not even from your neighborhood. That fear of how do I do this with someone else, right? It's almost like you're going into, I remember I was a high, obviously, you know, we all went to high school at some point, right? I was a kid who was just like, you know, I'm gonna stay in the background because I don't want to know, and I don't know what they're doing. And so it's just that, how do you get in with a popular club? But this popular club, as we all know, never turns out to be work out well, right? And so there are a lot of people, a lot of Americans who are afraid of change, and the shift and the change that's happening is not what they're taught, is not what they're accepted, and it's ingrained. And I think, you know, we want to change them, but it is for our responsibility to continue to be the change so they can see this is gonna be okay, right? And it's so hard to always be the one to stand up, to be that number one, as we tell our kids, don't be the bully, be the number one in the classroom, be the one who helps your friend. And it's so hard to continue to do that. But how else will we continue to change our environment when we hear about these miraculous stories of the school that is turned around or the classroom that's turned around, or, oh my goodness, you're doing that in your classroom. Can you please show me that situation? Oh my goodness, look at this community. This is where I think we are in. So being human, the fear of just changing for all of us being one is the deciding to truly be open and be open with our kids, right? Because it's hard for, we always say it's hard for adults to change. That's probably why, well, a lot of us need to be in therapy to make sure we're making that change in a good way. All right, that's all.
Thank you so much. You know, I think it's particularly hard right now when we're in the middle of a pandemic, right? So we're all siloed in our own comfortable spaces. And then a dialogue like this is asking us to move beyond that. And I think that it's really a moment of being brave and also healing, right? As we start to come out of this, there's going to be a reorientation and renegotiation of how to be with each other and how to move past silos and enter into differences and literally to diversity. So I also just want to honor the fact that this is a time of complex trauma on many levels, right? Including the pandemic that we're all living in and how hard that is for young people who are sort of built at that age for socialization. So another mention in the, I'm sorry, Diana, go ahead. You unmuted.
Okay, Deanna. Hi, good evening, everyone. What I was going to try to do is answer the question in response to the three words that was given to us earlier in the evening. One way of being more human together brings us to a sense of wanting to have that belonging to feel belong, that you belong to a particular family, group, exercise, whatever the dynamics are in that, but you want to have a sense of belonging. And in order to do that, those that are already belonging need to be intentional about bringing you in there. They have to have the mindset in order to do that. To be human, that we all sing our children's songs sometimes when we're watching the movies, to be human again, to be human again, in order to be human and to be in that space, what you have to do, I believe, is to go back to what was previously mentioned, is just to be kind. Just to be kind. That's really what it is. We all have the same needs, basic needs. To be wanted, to be loved, and to know it. And one way of doing that is to certainly to be kind. That's all.
Thank you, Deanna. There's also a comment in the chat that says, I think it's also the fear of saying or doing the wrong thing, and then you end up not doing anything because the fear takes over. And that is very true. I think a lot of us can relate to that. And I also think, again, it kind of forces us to lean into what our goal is, right? And how do we want to make changes? And how do we want to live in a world where there's actually equity, where there's actually inclusion and belonging, in a place where there's kindness? And that means moving outside of yourself to something greater than you and being able to challenge those fears in you in order to be more brave. Who else can kind of just unmute and share what's resonating with you? We don't have much time left, so I'd love for other people to kind of step into the space and share what's resonating for you, how you're going to spend tomorrow. If somebody wants to talk about acts of services that they're going to do tomorrow, reflections they're going to have, places that they're going to find some quiet and healing, anything that's sort of speaking to you in this moment. Maxine?
Yes, good evening.
Good evening.
In thinking about dealing with this fear, I think people have a fear. We have to learn how to be humble. People that are humble, Dr. King was a very humble person, but he was a strong person. And being humble gives you the advantage because you're listening. Everyone else is excited and on a rampage. They're not listening. You really have the power when you're a humble person, because you're listening, you're understanding, and this is actually what the pandemic should be teaching us, to be humble, think about things, think it through. You might really be surprised at what you understand about someone else, another race, another culture. As I said, Dr. King was a very humble person, and I was at the high school, I was in the choir, and I was fortunate enough to speak to him after that. And in talking to him, it was so, he wanted me to be the celebrity. He, in fact, was a celebrity, but he was such a humble, quiet person you would have never thought that he had that much dynamics inside of him. So I think this is one of the things that we have to teach young people, that everything isn't all about being explosive. You can reach people very quietly and determined if you're just a little humble and realize that the world, you're not the center. We're made up of so much that we would never even be able to reach all of it in our lifetime. So that's my thought for this evening.
Thank you, Maxine. Marjorie put in the chat cultural humility, which is so on point. And I think the pandemic, if anything, at least for me, has taught me to sit in those quiet moments of reflection. And hopefully for some of us, those quiet moments of racial accountability, where you're actually thinking about who you're talking to, what you're reading, what you're watching, how you're teaching your kids, what your community looks like. We had the opportunity to find those quiet moments, and hopefully tomorrow will be a day that some of you will lean into that as well. Anyone else want to open up their mics for the last few minutes that we have together?
Elvin? Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Can you see me?
I can hear you.
I guess I'm probably the oldest person on this chat line that we're having. I'm 77 years old.
I don't think so.
Oh, somebody older than me?
God 82. I love you, Christmas.
Okay. Well, I graduated from Montclair High School in 1961. And Montclair High School was integrated. I had many white friends. No problems at all. I had a basketball scholarship to Virginia State College. And when I went there in 1962, of course I had to deal with not only Jim Crow, but I had all black teachers, all black students. And I was surprised at their thought process when it comes to white people because of misinformation, the fact that they had no experience with anybody else. And that's part of the problem too. We don't mingle enough. Everybody's afraid to make contact with someone out of their neighborhood or out of their race. Because I was amazed when I went to Virginia State College at the things that they thought about white people. So a lot of that is communication and exposure, in my opinion.
Thank you. You know, I teach at Adelphi University, and I taught a freshman year seminar this year, and for maybe, there was maybe 25 students in the class, and more than half of them, I was the first professor of color that they've ever had at a university in Long Island. And so again, just sort of going back to Jeff Friedman's point about education system and how to really disrupt that system on a very deep level. Anyone else? We have time for about two more people before we move into the conclusion of tonight's event. Anyone want any student?
If I could just add something just quickly, just to feedback on what you just said. And I think it's our responsibility as educators, as leaders, to make sure that our youth, our students are equipped with the necessary skill sets so that they can have these, you know, courageous conversations. And I think one thing in my short time as the principal, but a lot of experience at Montclair High School, is that we have groups of students who are engaging in these conversations, right? And oftentimes I've learned a lot, and I always say you can learn a lot from the youth, I find myself learning every day, just even on Zoom calls and just, even emails and on the phone with some of my students. I think it's paramount that we make sure that our youth and our students have these skill sets to continue on with these types of dialogues and to, be able to engage this way. I think that's very, very important, very important.
I agree. Ann Margaret and I always talk about the power of the youth, and I would love for I would love for a student to be co-facilitating this with me, or for a student to actually be running this, because I know there are a lot of people out there, young folks who are doing social justice work. We have some chats and then we're gonna move into action steps. So Ella says, I think that people are scared of losing power. That's a very loaded statement, and yes. And I'd love for you to speak more on that quickly, Ella, if you'd like to. If not, I can move on to the next chat. Would you like to open up your mic? Okay, I'll take that as a no. Yes.
I think that a lot of people are just so used to like how they have a lot of power, and how some people, definitely minorities, don't have as much power, that when or if we can finally get together and try to break all of that down, they don't know where they would stand and like how they would adjust to this new system, I guess. So they're just kind of scared of not having that power.
Thank you for that. And thank you for being brave and opening up your mic. And, you know, so much of the equity piece of diversity, equity, inclusion is about the redistribution of power. So being able to understand where you hold that power, and then being, as Miriam said, this place of being humble and being able to share that power so that there comes a sense of community. Right. And then Maya says in the chat, I think one thing that gets in the way is a lack of awareness, because if we don't inform others of the extent of injustice, then there is no way to move forward and create change. Thank you, Maya, for that. Do you want to speak to that, or is it okay if I just read it?
I just think, like, in general, like, we need more education about this topic, because I think at least I've had a fair like education about topics like these, but I think in other parts of the country, people don't know exactly what's going on. So I think if we just create awareness, then we can move forward more quickly.
Absolutely, thank you for that. And that is, awareness is the first step. Awareness is the first step to recognizing bias. Awareness is the first step to building community when you realize that you're being exclusive instead of inclusive. So thank you so much for that. Anyone else? So Kaya says, I think people are unwilling to realize that the preconceptions they've had, that their parents and grandparents have always had about different groups of people, are very wrong. Open and honest communication is the only way to move forward positively. There will be no progress if no one, I'm guessing you said if no one is willing to listen to each other. Absolutely. Communication. And, you know, a lot of the ways that we enter this world is through the socialization of this, of the values that we've been taught, of how we've been growing up. And oftentimes we don't have the opportunity to interrogate those values, right? We just go through life with these ways of being, and rarely do we stop in a place of reflection and think about how those values affect our behavior, and then being able to communicate about that. So I absolutely thank you for that. So I think now we're gonna move to your sort of, I'm not gonna call it homework, but I'm gonna call it a question that we'd like for you to think about and also to write about in the chat. So we're gonna put the question on the screen for you all to see. And we would like for you to write in the chat box as you start to exit tonight, one way that you will be brave in your future conversation. So I'm really leaning into this practice of having these courageous conversations. And I wanna thank especially the students that wrote in the chat and spoke up, and for everyone tonight that shared space and were vulnerable. So you could answer that question, you can answer one or two words for your vision for a better future. So social justice work is grounded in envisioning. When you can sit and envision a way in which Dr. King would have liked to seen this society, to seen the Montclair community from a place of love, from a place of kindness, from a place of communication and awareness, That is what we'd like you to go into tomorrow thinking about, and really being intentional and mindful and leaning into this space of belonging in the Montclair community. So on behalf of the DEI committee and on behalf of the Y and Buddy and Anne Margaret, just we want to thank you for sharing space with us tonight. We have a video of a song that we're going to play now that's very powerful. Thanks, Mike Childs, for that. So continue to write in the chat, watch the video, have a safe evening with your family, and thank you so much for joining us tonight. And we hope you have a reflective day of service tomorrow.
If I could, I'd like you to just take... I'm sorry, I would like to just take a moment and thank all of you for joining us this evening. A special thanks out to Elvoid, Stanley, Laura, Principal Freeman, Elizabeth Voltman, and her students from Montclair High School. Our YMCA of Montclair Board of Directors, many of them were able to join us on this call. And of course, I'd like to thank our DEI committee and our staff that have helped put tonight's program together. As we end this evening and head into a historic week, with the inauguration of President-elect Joe Biden, following a very sad and stressful week due to the awful circumstances at our U.S. Capitol, I would like to share a few quotes from Dr. King. "We may have all come on different ships, but we're in the same boat now. Let us not seek to satisfy our thirst for freedom by drinking from the cup of bitterness and hatred. And then darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate, only love can do that. Our country needs to come together, and I think there's no better opportunity than to learn from the teachings of Dr. King. And with that, I thank you all again for being here this evening. Enjoy your Martin Luther King holiday tomorrow, and remember it is a day on and not a day off. Thank you.